Okay, I now call the third general session of the 75th anniversary convention of the California Council of Line to order. And I'm going to turn it over to our presiding officer for the day, newly elected for her first full term, Second Vice President Donna Pomerantz.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. All right, well, welcome, everyone, and gosh, I'm a little nervous here. First time, you know. All right, we'd like to go ahead and start off with our invocation. Dr. Jack Benninga, Professor of Education of Educational Psychology, California State University, Fresno.
They're playing right now against Utah State. The California Council of the Blind has a noble mission to increase the independence, security, equality of opportunity, and quality of life for all Californians who are blind or visually impaired. We recognize that our culture, our laws, our programs, and attitudes must be inclusive. Yet, the need for our advocacy continues and the road is often bumpy. I am Jewish, and our tradition relies on stories. Let me tell one that seems to relate to the task in which each of you is engaged. It's a Hasidic story about a certain 18th century rabbi, Rabbi Zusha, who said, "When I come to my final judgment before the heavenly court, and I'm asked, 'Zusha, why were you not Moses?' I will answer, 'Because I did not have Moses' leadership abilities.' And when I'm asked, 'Zusha, why were you not Abraham?' I will answer, 'Because I was not blessed with Abraham's intellectual abilities.' 'For every such question, I will have an answer,' said Rabbi Zusha. 'But,' he said, 'when I'm asked, 'Zusha, why were you not Zusha?' For that, I will have no answer." The point of this story is that though all of us have limits on our abilities, we also have capabilities and challenges that we alone can meet. As we respond to life's challenges, we gain a fleeting sense of who we truly are, the self we ought to be. Our ideals lead us on. The ideals of the California Council of the Blind are moral, and they are important. As you engage in that important work to create and strengthen local support networks for the blind and visually impaired, and as you work to build employment, educational and training opportunities, and further advocate for Californians who are blind and visually impaired, you will encounter frustrations and roadblocks. But how you respond to those challenges is really up to you. May we all aspire, therefore, to live up to our higher capabilities more of the time. Our Rabbi Eliezer said it well. He said, "Whoever does deeds of charity and justice is considered as having filled the world with loving kindness. As it is written, 'God loves charity and justice. The earth is filled with the loving kindness of the Lord.' So we pray that your good work bear much sweet fruit." And let us say, amen.
Amen. Amen.
Okay. Thank you. I'm informed that our color guard is not here, so if we may please, and Ed, is that still correct? Okay. All right. So if we may go ahead and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. You may be seated. All righty. Everybody's enthusiastic about different things, so. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. And I'm just making sure that our panel is
I'm going to announce about Frank being here, the time being changed.
Okay. I'd like to let everybody know that we're going to be moving things around just a little bit. We have on our agenda today for Frank Welty to give us a report. However, Frank will be reporting at another time due to the addition of the vote on the one convention or two a year issue.
Okay.
So what we'll do is, if we're able to, we will have him report at toward the end of the agenda today. Otherwise, we'll hear from him tomorrow. So thank you, Frank, for being flexible, as we always all are up here. Thank you. Okay. The next item is empowering the blind and visually impaired to expand their opportunities. Mary Beth Randall will be the moderator, and she's immediate past president of the Greater San Joaquin Valley chapter of the California Council of the Blind, Fresno, California. And what I will do is I will go ahead and allow Mary Beth to introduce the rest of the members of her panel. And I'd like you to please give your attention to Mary Beth and this panel. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna. And I am so glad to, of course, be here with everyone to celebrate our 75 years. And I would like to introduce to my right, his name is L. Ray Smith. And he has worked for the Valley Center for the Blind and is going to be speaking on behalf of our Center for the Blind about the things that are going on with the center and the things that the center strives to do. And then I am going to be speaking on behalf of the person who was supposed to be our other panel speaker. His name was Russ Holzer. And unfortunately, just 3 weeks ago, he unfortunately passed away. And so I will be speaking on the behalf of the many things that he has done and the many things that will continue to be done that he was able to get started here in Fresno. So I am going to turn it over to L. Ray, and we will go from there.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Thank you, Mary Beth. My name is L. Ray Smith, and I am the former executive director for Valley Center for the Blind. I hope all of you that are here enjoying this very wonderful 75th annual convention for the CCB. I certainly hope, if this is your first visit to Fresno, I hope you are enjoying yourselves and enjoying the nice Fresno air, breathing in some of that nice pesticides that we have. Yeah, I hope you're enjoying yourselves and continue to enjoy yourselves. I really count it a pleasure to be able to sit before you and give you a little history about the Valley Center for the Blind. Thank you, Mary Beth, for inviting me, and Eugene Lasagna. I certainly appreciate this opportunity. And, of course, our board president, Tom Randall, who I admire tremendously, and just on and on and on. I don't want to start calling names because I'll forget someone and then I won't get dinner tonight. So I'll go on and just give you a little brief history about the Valley Center for the Blind. Valley Center for the Blind was established. Initially, it was the Friendship Center for the Blind, and this was in 1973. I believe it was the fall of 1973. The founder is Dr. Andrea Swartz, and she was so into getting some type of support for the disabled and especially the blind and visually impaired here in the Valley, that she was so compelled that she would go out and literally collect folks on the street. She would drive her car up and down the street, and if she saw you with a white cane, she'd go and get you, and you were on your way to the center. And this is how we are today. You know, we're like this today. We are a close-knit family at the Valley Center for the Blind. A little brief history about myself. I worked previously at the beginning of the decade in the year 2000, 1999-98. I was working for the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. I was on my way to a fire scene down in San Diego, the San Diego Hills, and By golly, I tell you, from the road rest, from just here in Bakersfield, all the way clear down to clearing the grapevine. You know, I don't know how I did it, but I did. I had had an episode with diabetes. That's the cause of my blindness today, is ketoacidosis. I don't know how I made it to San Diego, but I did. Later to wake up 17 days out of a 17-day coma and with no vision, and I had no speech. I could not speak. I was too embarrassed to speak, even if I could, because I couldn't pronounce my words correctly. I couldn't pronounce my alphabets from A to Z. I couldn't stand. I had to go through different rehabs, and I'm sure, you know, there are some of you here that are sitting that has experienced similar, you know, circumstances. But to make a long story short, it was after I had came out of the coma that I had begun to wonder about my life. What am I going to do? Especially, you know, working with the state of California, contracting with the Department of Food and Agriculture, and just on and on and on. And I just thought life was over. You know, I thought to myself, you know, this is it. You know, this, I must have reached my pinnacle. There's just no more, you know. And I had this feeling, you know, I'm just a waste of air. I'm wasting air. I'm taking up space, you know. Why don't I just, you know, be taken out of here? Why has God left me like this? You know, God didn't do this. You know, this is just something that happened, just happened to happen to me. So this was the feeling that I had until I had, like I said, I come out of the coma and did the rehab thing and vocational rehab, you know, learn how to tie my shoe, just basics, learning how to get up in the morning, out of bed, brush my teeth, you know. And it was after all of the rehab training that when I had did indeed come back to Fresno, and I fell back into that rut again. What am I going to do? And I knew nothing of Valley Center for the Blind, Friendship Center for the Blind. And I got a call from the center, and it was one of the counselors that was on the phone. And they says, well, you know, we have some paperwork that was referred here to us by way of the Department of Rehabilitation. Why don't you come on by and just let's just talk, you know? And I says, yeah. And I was very reluctant about it, you know. And I tell you guys, it was like maybe 3 or 4 months before I actually did get over to the center. And I tell you, once I got there, basically all I could do with some of my colleagues that were there, such as Timmy Hahn, and we were in wheelchairs, you know, and we would just go to the center and just ride our wheelchairs up and down the hall, you know. Didn't know anything about Braille, didn't know anything about all of the fine adaptive technology that we have here today. Don't you think it's great, guys? Let's give our floor ahead, our exhibit. I tell you, they really have some really neat equipment out there. If you haven't had a chance to stop by, please do so also. But yeah, Timmy and I, we'd ride up and down the hall in our wheelchairs. We'd have a wheelchair race, you know. I didn't have my guide dog then, my trusted side companion, which is Boyd. I've had Boyd for the past 6 years. I'm trying to make this short because my life story is, you know, I could write a book about it. But it was until I got to the center that I came to the realization that there is indeed life after blindness. And I tell you, after, you know, here I am today. I like I said, I'm former director, executive director for the Blind Center. I enjoyed working for the center. I continue to support and volunteer services for the center. You know, it's the best center you can probably find this side of the border. I mean, just a great bunch of groups. Let's give the Valley Center for the Blind a big round of applause, guys. I tell you. So, you know, I said all of that to say this, and I'm going to close this with a quote by a very admired poet and philosopher, which is Thomas Gray. In 1792, he made the statement, him as well as I'm admired with Emerson, Ralph Waldo Emerson. He says, new opportunities are opening constantly, and the challenge, the great dilemma and the challenge is for us to be waiting for the doors to open so that when those challenges and the opportunities presented themselves, we can be ready to accept them and walk in the door and just do our thing, you know, and just continue on with life. So I really want to thank you once again for this opportunity, and I pray God's blessings on all of us. And hey, let's walk on by faith, guys, and let's keep on keeping on. And hey, you know, let's just do our thing, you know. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mary Beth. Thank you. I sure appreciate you.
And I would love for all of you to know that the Valley Center does have a booth over in the exhibits, but don't leave the session before to go and see them. But I know that they would love having you come by. I'm going to take this with me. I am going to talk to you about Russ Holzer. He was actually born in Chicago, and he was a one-of-a-kind kind of person. He had been losing his vision, and like El Rey, had absolutely no idea what to do with the rest of his life, except for that he wasn't a quitter. He knew that, and he knew that he needed to find some way to keep on keeping on, and he found out about the center, and he came to the center, and he started out with taking classes at the center and realized that there was a definite need for helping the community and helping those who were blind and visually impaired to see a better side of themselves and go on and deal with life and find something for them to do. And so he started becoming involved in the center. And this was in 2003. He and his wife moved to Fresno in, I believe it was 2002. And so he hadn't been in Fresno too terribly long when he got with the center. And he started out with volunteering, and it wasn't too terribly long when the center was then looking for a new director for the center. And he decided, no, what the heck, I'll apply for that. And, you know, he had no idea what he was getting himself into, I don't think. But I'll tell you what, once he was accepted as the director at that time, and he is the person who had the job right before El Rey here, and boy, when he took over that job, he started to really have a vision about how he wanted the center to be. For many years, the center was just a place of social activity, that kind of thing. But he wanted it to be more than that. And so it was due to Russ that the center's focus changed towards being a teaching school, essentially. And now many of the programs that the center has that have always existed in one way or another have been developed better so that they assist people who are newly blinded or need skills updated or anything like that, can come to the center, and with the aid of the Department of Rehabilitation and other grants and things like that, are able to get those skills so that we can help them go out into the job force. And Russ just, you know, was one of those kind of people who then also saw, okay, we have all these adults and things that are they're getting educated and they're getting, as a matter of fact, you know, one of the first people that we'll tell further about that Russ met and started to help out within a couple of years was our gentleman named Steve Frazier, who was also here at the convention. And there are just so many people that have been in Russ's life that I could never remember all of them. And so as the time gone on, though, he saw, you know what, we have a problem. We need to do something with the kids in school. And he was like, what's out there for those kids in school? And so as it got into around the year 2007, it just came about that it was time for Russ to move on. So he left his position as executive director with the center and then opened his own business, which I am now blanking on. Vision Tech Solutions. Thank you so much, Elroy, and others. And part of what he did is not only he, both Russ and the center, they sell technology, canes, magnifiers, you name it. So we have a place here in our valley without people having to go all the way to San Francisco, Sacramento, Los Angeles, which is awesome because now people can be right here and look at the devices and see what their needs are and get best fit for what they need. So he started his business, And as a part of that, he also started networking with the high schools and the school districts. And he also saw the need for, as he was doing this, that high school kids didn't really get that there was life beyond high school for them. They were blind, and they didn't know that they would be able to do something with themselves beyond high school. And so Russ took it upon himself and worked with instructors at the center who teach computers to help give these kids, A, better computer skills. But in conjunction with that, he also went to the city of Fresno and put together a proposal to start an internship program for high school students. And so it wasn't too terribly long. It didn't take awful long for this to happen. The city said, wow, this is a great idea. And so henceforth, a program started so that high school students are now being mentored in the city of Fresno and given internships. And all of this is because of Russ. And we are very, very grateful, because now we've got something that will give these kids a direction, that there's something for them, and that we can help them get an education after high school and help them get jobs. And then one of the other things is, as the city of Fresno was going along and, you know, getting to know Russ and the center better, they realized that at the same time that Russ was wanting to do something like this, that they were going to have a call center. And Russ had been wanting to do this through the center, but that wasn't happening fast enough and all of that. So he was all amazed, and you should have seen him when he saw the paper with the big old thing about the call center. And so one of the things, though, that happened as a result of it is Russ, along with my husband Tom, who taught computer skills and still teaches computer skills, helped train and get hired our very first blind employee for the city of Fresno, and that is Stephen Frazier. And so it's something that we're very proud of as an accomplishment that Russ did. Unfortunately, like I said, Russ got cancer, and then as a result of some complications from that, passed away just 3 weeks ago. But Russ's legacy will not be forgotten, because his son, John, is going to be, has taken over his business, and everything that Russ knew, Russ taught to his son. And so John is taking over that business, and although because of the economy, John can't afford to keep the office itself, he is running it out of his home, bless his heart, and he is going to keep that work going, and he wants to keep the program going with the internship and getting kids into the work program and all that kind of thing. And so if Russ were here, he would have actually talked to you for probably another 3 hours. He was one of those wonderful kind of people who just, you know, he hated to get up in front of people, but once he got started, he could get going. So I'm very pleased that I knew Russ, and I count him as a brother for life. And I am glad that I could be here today to be able to talk to you all about him and help you get to know him a little better. And I do not know if his wife Dottie is here at convention, but his wife Dottie and him were married for 23 years, and you know, I'll tell you what, they were the absolutely perfect pair. And I am glad that I'm able to still keep in touch with Dottie. So that is my part of the question, my part of the program. And I don't know if there's going to be time allowed for questions. I'll leave that up to Donna.
No, at this time we won't be able to take any questions. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Donna.
Donna, if I may also, Donna, this is El Rey. Donna, if I may, I'd also like to include that I have brochures here for those that live in the San Joaquin, the greater Fresno area. We're currently located at 2491 West Shaw Avenue. I don't know some of you guys live here, but you're always welcome. The center is open from Monday through Thursdays from 8 until 4 o'clock. So come on by and check us out and check out some of the fine, neat things that we are doing over there. I do appreciate. Yes, yes. We service from Merced to Bakersfield, Sacramento to Bakersfield. Wow. So if you have time, come on by. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, the next part of our program, before we actually get to the next part of the program, I have the honor to introduce two of our guests from the land of Hawaii who have come to, they always come and share in our convention, and I'd like to introduce Alonda Falan and Beth Flamada, who have come all the way from Hawaii to visit us and join us at our convention.
And brought us wonderful door prizes.
And I also especially want to thank them because they also brought us wonderful door prizes. And we thank you for that as well. And actually, Jeff was just telling me that Londa grew up here in California. So she started off here, and then she went off to the wonderful island of the wonderful islands. And but it's good to have you back with us. Thank you for being here.
We just loaned her to Hawaii.
Ken Metz says we just loaned her to Hawaii. So, and no, I didn't forget the third person who is joining us from Hawaii. But Mr. Don Thompson is actually going to be doing our next program item. So, Don, welcome, and we're glad to have you. And Don is going to talk a little bit about what's happening with other state affiliates. Don. Thank you.
Well, okay. I'm not sure I'm qualified to talk about any other state affiliates. I will say that Donna saved me the trouble of introducing these two Hanyaks that I'm sitting by. Because I had to say nice things about them. Now I don't have to. Yeah, we, of course, bring greetings from our affiliate, Warren Toyama, our president. He told me I had to come. So I came, and of course Fresno's a tolerable place.
Yeah, that mic is.
Speak right in. Okay,
there
Connie.
Go.
See, you can always, if there's something wrong, you can hear from Connie that it's wrong. We all know that. Washington knows it, Hawaii knows it, and California knows it.
Yeah.
Al and Connie come every year, and of course we've had Jeff, and we've had Mitch and Donna, and of course Chris. So it's fun. Anyway, we have the same trouble you guys do in terms of trying to get younger people into the organization. But we've been very effective legislatively. We're trying to work with the Department of Education, our Ho'opono people, who seem to be all NFB. But still, we get some things done. So I think for a small affiliate, we keep raising money and doing our best. I'd like to make a couple of comments. I guess it's something we learn as we're activists in an organization like this. I joined the organization in Hawaii in 1968, I guess. And I was a student, going to be a grad student over there. And I had gotten busted with 149 other people in a sit-in. And it was a tenure case. And then I started being active in the anti-war movement. So I told Warren, asked me, he said, "Do you want to run for first vice president? I could use you." And I said, "Warren, I just got busted in the city." He says, "What are you doing, campaigning?" And I said, "But I'm active in the anti-war movement." He says, "What are you doing, campaigning?" So I became the first vice president. I'd like to tell a little story about my California experience, because I never really accomplished anything here. I was kind of a mess. But anyway, in 1956, I was a part of a very good mailing campaign. We stuffed the letters. We did all that stuff that Kathy was in charge of. Stanley Henderson, the late guy, nice gentleman that we knew then. And I was a part of that in a fairly big way. And it was fun because I'm a rotten stuffer, so I got myself into a position where I would carry the big boxes around and put them on the table and pass out letters and pass out brochures and pass out other stuff. Well, anyway, the point that I'm making is if Kathy would have killed me, I think, if she knew this, but all the boxes were put up by some big strong guy up on these shelves. and I had to climb up a two-step ladder. Now, I was only weighed about 135 pounds then, and I was pulling. I'd pull these boxes off. I couldn't have dropped them, and I might have fallen. So I'd push them out into space and jump, and kept pushing them so they were going horizontally. And they would go horizontally, then that took the weight off, and then I would catch them as I ran under them. And I did that to every box, Kathy. And I never dropped one. But anyway, thank you for letting me talk. I know Jeff gave me 10 minutes, but I don't want to take 10 minutes. You got a good convention here. You don't need to hear from me anymore. Thank you very much.
All righty. The next person on our program is somebody that we all know, and that would be Lainey Feingold. And yeah, big hand for Lainey. Lainey, I feel like she's family. We have definitely been working with her for quite a number of years, and she wrote me a little short bio, and basically it says Lainey Feingold graduated law school in 1981. Since 1986, she has had her own law practice in Berkeley, California, devoted exclusively to representing persons with disabilities under federal and state law. Why is it that whenever I get a microphone, I get a frog in my throat? Lainey has worked closely with CCB and its members since 1995. Wow, we have a long history. Along with her co-counsel, Linda Dardarian, Lainey has helped CCB negotiate accessibility agreements with some of the largest companies in the United States, including, and we have here first, Bank of America. Yes! Walmart. And CVS. Uh-huh. These agreements have resulted in talking ATMs, accessible websites, tactile point of sale devices, accessible audible pedestrian signals, and alternative formats including Braille, audio, and large print for financial information, including bank statements and credit reports. Yes, that is a good thing for us. Lainey and Linda have negotiated these agreements on behalf of CCB, ACB, and others without filing a single lawsuit in 14 years. Instead, they have developed an alternative to litigation known as, let's all say it, structured negotiations. Yes. A method, I wanted to see if you guys were all awake. Yay, I like this. It was the door prizes that did it. Okay. This is a method that focuses on solution. Structured negotiations emphasizes collaboration among the blind community. We've all had a part in assisting in negotiating all of these. And what I would like to do is, without further delay, I would like to introduce Lainey Feingold. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, CCB, for inviting me. But Donna didn't read, like, the last line of my bio, which is Lainey and Linda love working with CCB, are honored to count CCB and its members among our friends and dear colleagues. And Okay, so there's two things I have to do housekeeping-wise. First, how much time do I have? Because I could really go on forever about how great CCB is and the incredible advocacy work that Linda and I often get credit for, but in fact, it's this organization's credit and each individual in this room and beyond. So how much time do I have so I don't go over?
At least a half hour.
Okay, I got my clock here. Second, I want to channel my friend and colleague and your friend and lawyer, Linda Dardarian, who really wanted to be here today but had a prior commitment she couldn't get out of, and she sent me an email yesterday saying, you know, send hugs and kisses to everybody. So Linda's up here with me, and I'm channeling her in these remarks. I've been actually in New York for the last 2 months on sort of a semi-sabbatical with my husband, and we were supposed to come back today, but when I found out this was the 75th convention of CCB, I said, I can't miss that, so I came back yesterday, and my topic for this half hour is supposed to be structured negotiations update. And what I'm going to do is I want to just talk a little tiny bit about the history, since this is 75th annual convention, a little bit about what we're doing now, and if it's okay with Jeff and Donna, save about 10 minutes at the end for questions, if that works. Okay, so, I mean, I think everybody knows that CCB has been involved with structured negotiations, but I'm not sure everybody in this room knows that CCB started structured negotiations. CCB was the very first organization in the country to ever work to trust a method that didn't involve lawsuits to resolve accessibility issues for the blind community. And like Donna said in the intro, Linda and I started working with CCB in 1995 when Mitch was president, and we had years of Kathy being the president, now Jeff being the president. And you guys really need to give yourselves a round of applause for having the kind of leadership that was willing to go out on a limb and trust these two lawyers who really had not known much about this whole field to say, we think we can get better results working with corporations rather than suing corporations. And I think the proof has been in the pudding over the last 15 years. I know when you're at a convention like this, because I've been at many different conventions, that everything the speakers say, they seem interesting at the time, but then when you go home at night, you're like, what did that person say? And it's just so hard to remember. So I was trying to think, like, what one or two words can you say? Well, yeah, I know Lainey talked for half an hour, but what exactly did she say? So the words that I want to sort of emphasize. Yeah, and plus she's like a lawyer. But she hasn't filed a lawsuit in 15 years, so that's good. So there's a couple words I want to say, so when you're thinking about it, you can say, oh, right. And one of those words is thousands. One of those words is thousands, because CCB and its membership are directly and unequivocally responsible for thousands of talking ATMs, thousands of pages of accessible websites, thousands of point-of-sale with tactile keypads, and actually hundreds of thousands. When CCB started in the talking ATM issue, there were no talking ATMs in the United States, and even though I haven't been able to keep precise count like I used to when there were, you know, the first five and then 20 and then 100. But by my best estimate, there's, you know, at least 100,000 in the United States. And literally, it all started with the California Council of the Blind and individual CCB members. Now, I decided I was not going to name every CCB member who's been involved in the effort, because I could only get in trouble. However, luckily, in the front row here, I can mention three early people, and I'm not going past the front row, but I can't get in trouble because I can see who's in the front row. And I could see that Bernice and Roger, who were in the first Bank of America structured negotiations, who were testing the first ATMs before there were ATMs, plus Mitch, who was the first CCB president to trust this method, are in the front row. So as stand-ins for the hundreds of CCB members who have helped in this effort, I'd like to give a round of applause to the front row and all of you. Because structured negotiations, you know, sounds like a legal thing, but honestly, it's about the individuals who come to Linda and I with an issue. The point of sale thing. You know, people, we used to say, why don't more people use the talking ATMs? And people used to say, well, it's easy enough to get cash at the grocery store. We can just put in our PIN and get a cash back. And then what happened is that the grocery stores and other retailers started to put in flat screen point of sale devices, and it wasn't so easy to get cash back. And individual CCB members throughout the state, you know, we started hearing trickle down reports, well, you know, we can't use the point of sale devices at Walmart anymore, or we, you know, it was a step backwards. We can't use the point of sale devices at CVS. And now California Council of the Blind has signed settlement agreements with Trader Joe's, CVS, Target, Safeway, Walmart, Rite Aid, Radio Shack, 7-Eleven, just on the point of sale, right there, hundreds of thousands of keypads at California retailers because of the work this organization did in coming forward and being a good advocate. So that's part of the thousands, the keypads. In terms of web accessibility, Bank of America, which California Council of the Blind and Roger and Bernice and other individuals were part of the initial efforts, very first, not just bank, very first private institution in the country to sign an agreement that they would make their website accessible. And now CCB has been involved in more settlement agreements than any other organization, state or national, in the entire United States to make websites accessible. Most sort of biggest and recent, CVS and the annual credit reports, which are now available in Braille, large print, audio format on CD, plus online accessible. Binding legal settlement agreements without lawsuits, without a lot of fanfare, you know, without a lot of negative press releases saying this company's bad or that company's bad. Settlement agreements that are, in fact, making the web more accessible to people who are blind because of CCB's advocacy. Another thing in the, well, it's not quite in the thousands. Well, it is, the money's in the thousands, is the CCB effort for accessible pedestrian signals in San Francisco. The first agreement in the country, CCB and the Lighthouse spearheading the advocacy around accessible pedestrian signals in San Francisco. The agreement's now about, we're in the almost in the end of the second year of a 2.5-year agreement where the city committed to spend $1.6 million and equip at least 80 intersections. They've already installed over 600 individual units at 60 intersections in San Francisco. So CCB's efforts, I don't know if Gene's here, but, you know, Gene Lozano, the technical brains behind the APS effort. Again, CCB advocacy in trusting that sitting down with San Francisco would be the best way to get the kind of results that the blind community deserves. In terms of, well, the last thousands is really thousands of pages of Braille in large print. I mean, you know, the technology, the talking ATMs, the accessible websites, APS get a little more, you know, they have a little more appeal when people are talking about, oh, what have we accomplished? But when you look at what industry in the country is providing information in accessible formats better than anyone else, it's a financial service industry because of the California Council's blind work over the past 14 years. Braille bank statements from every major bank in the United States, and CCB played a leadership role in getting other affiliates around the country to work locally on their banks. So Braille, large print, audio format, another issue where the word thousands is relevant. In terms of the structure negotiations efforts ongoing right at this moment, in terms of the sort of the biggest things that are happening, CCB has been involved along with Bay State Council of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind in making Major League Baseball more accessible online. We hope to have a big public announcement. We hope to have a big public announcement in the next couple months, but any of you who are online baseball fans know that there's been very significant improvement this year. For the first time ever, there was All-Star ballot voting that was accessible online to the blind community. There was game day audio that was much, much more accessible, and it will be more accessible still next year. So that's another web issue that's going on right now. We're continuing with the point of sale work. We have several retailers that we're in negotiations with. We have other retailers who we are hoping to get into negotiations with. The ones who have already agreed to work with us and have started installing tactile point of sales, besides the ones I mentioned earlier that haven't been announced yet, are Whole Foods and Best Buy. We're also hoping to work with Raley's to improve their tactile solution, which isn't working at this moment, to put it bluntly. We're trying to, and we encourage all of you to help us in this effort, to do for the healthcare industry what CCB has done for the financial service industry, which is to make sure that information, both insurance information, health information, is provided in formats that blind people can access. The biggest effort going on right now in that arena is with the American Council of the Blind is working with the American Cancer Society to make sure that cancer information is accessible to blind people. Some of you have responded to our posts about making sure insurance information, just like financial information, is available in Braille, large print, audio, and online accessible. Healthcare information needs to be accessible in that way. We're working on that. And probably one of the things that affects almost everyone in this room, if not everyone, is working on accessible prescription labeling to make sure that if you're blind, you need to know what's in that prescription as much as a sighted person does. I think those are all the sort of the main things we're doing right now. One of the things I wanted to use this session for, and for this I want to channel Margie Donovan, who I know couldn't be here because something came up with her, but Margie has really helped me realize over the years, as have many others of you, Donna, prime example, that these settlements, either before they're negotiated and after, they do not work without the participation of individuals. I mean, Margie, I'm telling you, every time she goes shopping, I get a phone call. Either she had a good experience or a bad experience, but either way, I know what's happening on the ground. And the only way Linda and I can really, you know, be your lawyers is for you to communicate with us what you're experiencing. Every single agreement that's been negotiated, you know, we have 35 agreements so far, they all started with individual blind people demanding their rights, recognizing a problem, and communicating it through the organization and then to us. So I just want to, you know, partly use this session to ask you to take ownership of this structured negotiations process. And when you hear that, oh, Radio Shack signed an agreement to make their website accessible and have tactile point of sale devices, if you shop at Radio Shack, you need to ask for that. You know, all too often we hear, oh, we never get a blind person in this store, or, you know, they're always shopping with their sighted partner, friend, mother, daughter, whatever, so they don't really need to be able to enter their own PIN. So, you know, we're doing all, you know, California Council of the Blind and us as your lawyers are doing all this work, but if you don't go out there and demand what we're winning through the structured negotiations, it is going to, you know, float away. In 10 years, we're going to, like, be back to square one, because this technology is constantly changing. They're constantly upgrading. I was, you know, I personally, whenever I'm in a retail setting, I check out the talking ATM or, you know, use a point of sale. And it was so rewarding for me in New York. Every time I went to a Bank America ATM, I tried the talking. And they're basically in their third generation talking ATM. And every single one worked. And it's, welcome to Bank America. This ATM provides spoken instruction for the blind, you know, and it's, and in Spanish. So I really can't emphasize enough that these agreements don't work unless those of you on the street are asking for the results and reporting problems, because there will be problems. These are large corporations with big, you know, retail staff that has a lot of turnover. I mean, I went into a CVS and the woman says, no, we don't have any tactile keypads. And I said, can I talk to the manager? And the manager's like, yes, here it is, right here. It was like right in front of the person. She didn't, you know. Yeah. And you know, I don't know what your experience is, but my experience is when you point it out to a clerk, they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to know about that. So, you know, when you read in the, you know, on the email lists or on the, you know, in the publications that CCB or ACB has signed an agreement, you know, how many in this room have gotten their credit report? You don't have to raise your hand because I really don't want to know if it's not a lot of you. But, you know, it was a big fight to get accessible credit reports. And the only way we're going to make sure they keep up and do it right is that you need to ask for your free accessible credit report. You're entitled to one free a year from each of three companies. So if you space it every 4 months, you can get three during the year, and it's, you know, we're bombarded with information to check our credit reports. So once you hear about an agreement, we need your help in making it work. And if you don't get what you think you're going to get, you need to tell somebody. Call the office. Ed is really great at, you know, passing on the information to us. Or, you know, I don't want to say call Jeff or Donna, who probably get a million phone calls a day. But, you know, you got to ask for it, and you can't be frustrated when you don't get it. Because the only way this stuff is going to work is constant advocacy. And that's the other takeaway from this session. One word is thousands for the thousands of accessible equipment and information you guys have gotten. And the other word is advocacy. Because everybody in this room needs to think of themselves, and really by coming to this convention, you've already shown yourselves to be advocates. And being an advocate means if you have a choice, pay with a debit card to see if they have a tactile keypad. You know, California gets a new law effective January 1st in 2 months that every single register in every single store in the state needs to have a tactile keypad. Yeah. Every. So, you know, to channel Margie again, one of the emails she sent yesterday is that her Trader Joe's has tactile keypads in every single register in her store. The agreement that ACB, CCB, and the American Foundation for the Blind, who I should have mentioned sooner, has been our partner in a lot of these point of sale and other issues. In California, we get every single register. We're also trying to be leadership for the rest of the country where we get some percentage, if not every register. So, you know, especially after January 1st, if you are asked to enter your PIN, you need to call the office or email me or, you know, make it known because that's a violation. Same thing with agreements that we haven't signed. You know, if you want insurance information for health insurance or any kind of insurance for that matter, and you're not getting it, you need to expect that you have a right to accessible information. And ask for accessible information. And if you don't get accessible information, be in touch with the CCB or, you know, and through the CCB with Linda and me. And that's how things are going to change. That's how CCB has made such incredible accomplishments over the last 75 years, but I haven't been involved that long. Although, some days it feels like that, right, Mitch, Jeff, and Donna? Yeah. So, okay. The other thing I just want to say in terms of keeping abreast of information, CCB has incredible lists. ACB has an incredible publication. I have a website, which is my initials, lflegal.com, lflegal, no spaces, .com, where every agreement that CCB has negotiated is posted. I've done about 5 posts on the history of the Talking ATM effort, emphasizing CCB's role in the early and continuing stages. Joel is doing a great job with CCB's website and putting up, and I really urge you to familiarize yourself with that, and don't think of structured negotiations or CCB's lawyers as something apart from yourselves. This is your organization. Linda and I are your lawyers. This stuff is only working because of individual efforts. So we could take some questions if there's time, Donna.
Okay, if anyone has a question, go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll get a mic over to you. Ed's putting on his roller skates. Okay.
Charlene Ornelas. I'm finding some of the stores may have the keypad with the digits on it. But what I'm finding is when it comes the information on the screen, I have to ask somebody, like, okay, is it ready for me to put my PIN in? Are they solving that issue too?
Yeah, that is a very good question. The point of sale devices that we are getting in these agreements are not independently usable the way talking ATMs are. The reason for that is we don't have the legal or regulatory support for insisting on a talking point of sale devices. But the issue that you're raising is something I meant to touch on, which is these agreements are not just about pieces of hardware or software. They're about staff training and knowledge. And the best people to do staff training, in all these agreements we write in, you have to train your staff. We review the training materials. Some of the materials are good, some aren't so good. But nothing is better for staff training than an actual blind customer. You know, and it's, I'm torn about this because when you go shopping at CVS, you don't feel like being, you know, a disability trainer. But in fact, you may be the first person that clerk has ever met who's blind. So yes, has to be a lot of interaction between staff and the customer on the point of sale device. And in some ways, it's up to you to help. You can think of it as, you know, sort of paying it forward or something. Any education you provide that clerk is going to help the next person down the road.
Okay, next question.
Okay, I guess this is, can you guys hear me? I guess this is on.
Yes.
This is Andrea Pitzenbarger from Orange County, and I actually have a couple of really quick comments. I can only reinforce what Lainey said about training, and my experience has come, I always ask for the keypad. And Braille menus. I cannot believe how many people do not know what Braille is.
What?
I never knew that. Do we have a what? Well, we have a low-carb menu. They don't have a clue. But the places that do, I was in a Red Robin the other day, and the waiter came up to me and he said, I didn't even know we had that. I am so excited about that because I educated somebody. When Kathy Schmidt Whitaker and I tested the ATM or the Target point of sale device last year, it had a way to tell when it was ready. So this is doable apparently, because that was part of the process for them, was that it beeped or did something that let us know it was ready to use. So that is doable, and they had that. My other quick comment is, and Lainey didn't mention accessible voting. The proudest day of my life was my 34th birthday when I walked into my polling place and I said, I want to use the audio system, and they handed me the headset and I sat down and used that system. And I'm going to say one more quick thing. The next election I was voting in, I walked in and I said, I want to use it. Oh, it's broken. I said, okay, I'll be here until you fix it. They called. They got somebody. They brought out a new machine. I said, I will just sit here. I have my book. I'm going to just wait until it's done. And then, because my husband said, oh, well, I can help you. I said, nope, you're not going to help me. I'm going to sit right here, and they're going to fix it, and I'm going to do my voting by myself. And I did.
Okay, we're going to take one more question now, but before everybody goes, oh, and tries to stone me and forgets that I gave you all kinds of door prizes, Lainey said that after session is over, she will be in the back of the room. If anyone wants to talk to her, or actually if it's after session, you could stay up here in front. If anyone wanted to have questions, because there were lots of hands, and we apologize, but our last question, please.
Hi, Lainey. This is Annette, and I want to say thank you. Thank you for all that you do. And I've seen the progress in the local Radio Shack, from no point-of-sale buttons to one where the buttons were a little funky, and to really easy buttons. I've seen that progress. Thank you. And my question at Trader Joe's, the training, do they all know, or are they in the process where all registers need to have the buttons?
Well, yeah, like I said, in California, there's a law that every register is going to have the button by the end of the year. But honestly, I mean, really the best way for this to happen is if you go and they don't know, they've never, you know, to let us know, and then we get back to the Trader Joe's person. I'll just tell you a quick short story because I know we're out of time, which is, you know, CCB had the very first talking ATM agreement in the country with it was first with Wells Fargo, also first with Citibank. And the Citibank agreement, expired in 2003. And just last week, honestly, last week while I was in New York, but I dealt with it, the lawyer for the National Federation for the Blind called me and said one of his partners went to a Citibank ATM and it wasn't working. And I see the agreement expired in 2003. Can you do anything about it? And because CCB has such good relationships with all these institutions because of the individuals who are part of the process, I sent a letter to this guy we haven't dealt with for like 4 years, and the thing was fixed in 24 hours. And I kid you not. And the lawyer wrote me back and said, is this always how you guys do things? And I said, we try, and we do. Thank you so much to all of you.
Okay, thank you for that. Okay, for our next program item, I'm going to go ahead and thank all of you for putting up with me this afternoon and give the program back to our president, Jeff Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. Great job. In fact, I really think we ought to let her keep the session going on herself. Great job, Donna. And I just, you know, one more note on everything that we heard, just heard from Lainey. It comes as no surprise that, and of course, not only does it come with a little help from Lainey as well, but that our diamond sponsor, Wells Fargo, mentioned yesterday the 10th anniversary of the ATM agreements. And of course, another one of our sponsors, Union Bank. We wouldn't have had either of those sponsors, I don't feel, had we not had the contacts developed through the agreements we have. So thanks again, Lainey, and let's give her one more hand. Okay, so I want to bring on to present the survey findings, and then we'll get on into presenting. Let me make an announcement first. I'm sorry, before this happens, about tomorrow, I had scheduled to begin at 8:30. Because essentially we had thought that originally we had planned that the item would occur tomorrow. We wanted to make sure there'd be enough time for debate. I'm still not going to change that time for a couple of reasons. First, you're going to get that hour tonight, so that's part of it. And second, a lot of people have early trains, things like that. We will probably have Frank to hear, and I want as many people to hear him as possible. So I think that I want you all to remember we're starting at 8:30 tomorrow. I remember, Kathy, we had some 8:30 starts in your time, didn't we? I think we did.
I don't remember.
No? You don't remember. Okay, well, I think we did. So, it's at 8:30. Okay, so let me turn it over to report on the survey results before we get into the actual motion itself. Jerry Consler, chair of our Constitutional and Bylaws Committee. Jerry? Okay. All right. Then Jerry should mention.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. Okay. Do you want to go first, Linda?
Oh, no. Why don't you introduce what we did, and then I'll talk about gathering the...
Okay. We were asked to conduct a survey. A task force was appointed by President Tom, chaired by Roger Peterson. Members were Gene Lozano, Linda Perrell, and myself, and I'm not sure if Foster Brown, I think he was invited, I'm not sure if we got a response. But we were under a time constraint, and we designed a survey instrument to try to get a feel from the chapters and the affiliates as to how people felt about what would occur were this amendment that has been proposed adopted. So when I first wrote this out, I didn't have numbers on the items, and I sent it off to the task force, and later on we were asked to put numbers on it, and in doing that, I realized that some of the things would not fall together quite the way that I had envisioned them. And so there was a part of it where we said that these items are not mutually exclusive. Well, they turned out to be that way, and eventually I bifurcated the data so that we could get some reasonable percentages. We got responses from 11 chapters and one statewide affiliate. There may be other responses that went to the central office, but as you know, the server went down, and they may be floating around in cyberspace with a capital C. And I'd like to say that what I will tell you about this survey is probably not reliable in terms of making a statement that this is representative of the membership of CCP, for the reason that with 31 chapters listed on the website and 8 affiliates, you need a very large portion of that small population in order to make statements about it, very much like a Harris poll. And the reason that they can survey 1,300 people and make a statement that it's representative of 250 million people is because of the equations that are used. But when you have only 39 things, excuse me, to deal with, and you get 12 of them back, you don't have a representative sample. So, and there were some other reasons involved. So this is interesting, but it, again, it may not be reliable. Our first area was the question of the time of the year. These are all if questions. I'm sorry.
Before you give them, I wanted to talk about collecting.
Oh, okay. Here's Linda for you.
Okay.
Sure. Go ahead.
Sorry, everyone. We didn't quite coordinate this, but anyway, it was a privilege to serve on this committee and a very interesting topic. I decided to appoint myself designated NAG. And so it was my job to call all the chapter presidents that I could and remind them to conduct this survey with their chapters. I actually spoke with 17 presidents and left messages for 9 others. And it was very interesting to talk to people. I talked to people mostly in the early evening. I talked to one president who had broken her foot and whose affiliate had not met in quite a while because they've lost their transportation. I've talked to a president who had a cherished chapter member who was whose husband was seriously ill and has since passed away. I could hear people having dinner in the background. I could hear doggies barking. I could hear people leading their lives as I urged them to consider this important topic. What is really interesting is that I got a wide variety of responses. And so the survey was complex. It had a lot of elements to it. But we must have been doing something right, because here is the range of responses. On the one end of the response continuum were people who were absolutely certain that this survey was pro one convention. And why were we doing this? You know, because, just to sway the vote to make it one convention. In the middle of the spectrum, one president said to me, "I don't think they really care." And at the other end of the spectrum were people who were absolutely certain that the survey was set up by people who favored two conventions to show the enormity of changing to one convention so that people would become afraid and inert and unable to do it. So we must have been doing something right if we got that whole range of responses. I just want to say, before handing it back to Jerry to say the actual results, is one thing to keep in mind as we're deliberating today I would like to urge you to not make either one of these statements your primary deciding factor. Either the statement, "We've always done it this way before," or the statement, "We've never done this kind of thing before." I think we have to go into this discussion with a completely open mind and see where we come. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Linda. Yes, I think that's very important. There's a lot to be considered if this change is made. As a student of your constitution and bylaws, I can tell you, and I've written a lengthy memo to the committee regarding this, there are a number of things that are going to have to change if this happens. And we wanted your feedback on how some of those things might happen. What some of them relate specifically to changes in the Constitution and the bylaws. Some of them do not. The very first one is a question on if this were to happen, what time of year would you prefer? And the possibilities were spring, fall, or to alternate, or no preference.
See if we can get one.
That's not something that's prescribed in any document anywhere, but if this is adopted, if this were to be adopted, decision makers need to know the sentiments of the group as to how that might take place. So that was the principal reason for the survey. So at any rate, the response to that question, time of year, spring got 54.55%. Fall got, I can't see this, 21.82%. To alternate between spring and fall got 2.67%. And those with no preference got 20%. So I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. Item B is the length of the convention. In other words, because if it goes to 1 year, should it be longer? Should it stay the same, and so forth? So those were the choices. Keep it the same. Got 49.54%. Extend it by 1 day. Got 34.86%. Extend it by 2 days. You'll love this. Got 0.92%. And extend it by 3 days. Fell off the chart with a big fat zero. Nobody wants to do it that long. And no preference. Got 12.76%. And there was a choice for other, and we did have comments. I might ask Ed if he would get ready. I do have the sheet of comments. I was pulling them together and my computer crashed, but I did get to print them out, but I don't have them tied up with their sources. So I think it might be useful at the end if he just read the whole page to you. And they relate to several different areas. Now, we went to an item C that we split into three areas. And the first was, Ed, can you help? I have the questionnaire here also. I apologize, my writing is, the lighting in here is not great. Or some, item C1. I need to find item C1 and tell me what that is. Yes, okay. As far as the convention itself, and I'll need you in a moment again also. Item C1 is speakers and presenters. We're talking about convention content balance. And so one of the areas is speakers and presenters. And question number 11, keep as the same would be 42.59%, fairly robust. And to what does this say here? All right, increase time allotted for each. Thank you. Don't go. No, you get right up next to me. This is great. I'm taking you home with me. Increased time allotted was 4.63%. Is this decrease? Decreased time allotted was 5.55%. And tell me this. Can you read this?
Decrease time. I think I'll read it again.
a decrease of...
Well, no, it's not his fault.
Okay.
And then the next one, 15, is decreased number.
All right, let's go to decreased number, which is 3.7%, and no preference was 37.9%.
Could I intrude a second,
sure,
Jerry?
Sure.
The light isn't better in the middle of the table. It's much brighter.
Well, we're getting nearly done here.
All right.
Okay, where are we now?
C2
is statewide affiliate and committee meeting opportunities. And keep as the same was, is it 59. This one? 59.8%. Keep as the same, 59.8%.
Increase
37.25. Decrease 2.94. Nobody wants to decrease the time. C.3, referring to the content of general session and business session time allotments. Keep as is, 34.35. Increase 6.87. Decrease 3.05. No preference. 41.98%. You're doing great. Help.
And then other
was
13.
I'm not sure why I gave a value to other. Several respondents must have marked that. And
onto D would be as attendance.
D is attendance, that is to say, would your chapter or affiliate continue to send the same number of members or increase or decrease that? So the first one is keep the same, 87.75%, 87%.
Increase
the number was 12.25%. Decrease was 0%. I think that's revealing. All right, these were very interesting to me. This is 28 and 29, right? 28, we asked for a value on a scale of whether or not, aside from giving a specific answer to would you prefer spring or prefer fall and so forth, we thought we'd have a scale of feelings about how influential the time of year that was chosen would be, and also whether or not geography were an important factor. So I'm going to slide it over and let my... What is your name?
Jared.
I'm going to let Jared read these. That's all right.
All right. On a scale from 1 to 5, how influential the time of year for the conference is, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 was a... Are these percentage?
Those are percentages. You don't need to read the end numbers.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, here. I gotcha. Number of people that voted that on a scale of 1 to 5, that 1 being the least...
The least, correct.
That
the least influential, in other words.
Would be 1. On a scale of 1 to 5, answering 2 would be 0. On a scale of 1 to 5, answering 3 would be 2 people. On a scale of 1 to 5, answering 4 would be 3 people. And on a scale of 1 to 5, answering 5 would be 1 people.
Okay. Go ahead and read
that. It says, the number of respondents marking the scale was 7. The average value place on the least to greatest scale, then the point then is the 25 points divided by 7 is 3.43. The average value would be 3.
We're saying that the respondents came out in the middle of that scale, that time would be influential between the least. The time of year chosen would be influential between it being least having a least value and having a greatest value. On a scale like that, you normally expect respondents to come out somewhere in the middle. This is above somewhere in the middle. So, in other words, those who responded said, more or less, yes, time is a factor influencing how we would send people to these conventions. All right, and the same concept is there for geography.
And how influential... How influential geography would be on a scale of 1 to 5. A 1 on a scale of 1 to 5, there was one person. On a scale of 1 to 5 being 2 would be 2 persons. On a scale of 1 to 5 answering 3 would be 3 persons. On a scale of 1 to 5 answering 4 would be 2 persons. On a scale of 1 to 5 answering 5 would be 2 persons.
And read the percentage.
The number of respondents marking the scale was 10. The average value then is the 35 points divided by 10, or 3.2.
In other words, all the respondents had the same weight given on the scale. So both time and geography came out in the middle, suggesting that they were somewhat important as factors influencing how they would send representatives or members of their groups to the conventions. I think I'd like to jump up a little further to the end. The others aren't that critical. What are we at now? 30? What? Tell me what 30 is. All right, here's one that is actually in the bylaws that would have to be addressed, and that is nominations and voting. And the choices were to keep it as it is, where we nominate at one convention and elect at the next, or to the second choice was to nominate at the beginning of the convention, if it's an annual convention, and vote at the end of that convention. The third choice was to have some other thing, a telephone conference arrangement or some electronic thing, something like that, and other. So the percentage to keep it as it is was 2.06. You couldn't keep it that way, because if you nominate at one convention, it's a year later before you elect. At the beginning and voting at the end? 73.19. So that's your decision makers are going to look at that carefully, I think. 73 to nominate at the beginning of a convention and elect at the end was 73.19%.
And then by telephone or other means, 0%.
Telephone or other means, we got 0%. And other. Yeah, we didn't do a count on other, but we got some good comments. One was to list candidates on the website. So.
Oh, Lord. You're for that, right, Ken?
Now, at the very end, I'm sorry, at the very end, we jumped to one convention or two, and we have here a gatecrasher. We call these things gatecrashers, where if you make a choice on one thing, you don't go on to the other things. And it was a reverse gatecrasher, because the people who chose to stay with two bailed out at that point and didn't answer the rest of it. But those who chose the second choice, which was go to one convention per year, didn't answer the rest of the questions. So we have kind of a reverse gate. In other words, you expect some people who are supposed to bail out to go ahead and answer the rest of the questions. We call them gate crashers. So we got a reverse gate crasher thing. So the stay with two was 41.75, and go to one was 58.25. And then it went further to say, all right, if you choose one, then would you rather have it in the spring? We kind of repeated that. Would you rather have it in the spring?
Only in the spring would be 28.5.
28.5? 7.
By fall. Only in the fall.
24.49.
One but rotating.
One but rotating. I would take that to mean, although we didn't describe this, you'd go for 3 years in the spring and then go for 3 years in the fall. That's what I understood to be rotating. But it only got 6.12%. So. And then there was a choice, the very last thing, one convention per year, but it doesn't matter when. 40.8%. So there, Mr. President, are the results of the survey. Thank you. Thank you for your help. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jerry. Okay, so I'm now going to turn it back over to Jerry for the beginning, and we will not have a motion to accept the report of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee at the end of the day, because tomorrow they will finish with one more much shorter amendment, in terms, at least in terms of time, I am sure. So, yes.
At
7:45, it's listed. Yes, Kathy. I wouldn't forget that. Okay. Gee, it sounds like somebody wants a slot machine. Either the one convention won or the two convention won. I don't know which. Somebody won. Okay, now, Jerry. You are now on to present the first constitutional amendment.
Thank you.
And that's the only one for today.
Correct.
Just to be clear.
An amendment to the CCB Constitution was proposed and presented at the spring convention of the council. And it is... In Article 5, Meeting, Section 5.1, there shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind semi-annually, the time and place to be fixed in advance by the President or the Convention. And that would be amended to change the word semi-annually to the word annually, so that it would now read Section 5.1, there shall be a regularly scheduled meeting of the California Council of the Blind annually, the time and place to be fixed in advance by the President or the Convention. The CCB Constitution and Bylaws Committee makes no recommendation on this proposed amendment. It does, however, recommend that for reasons of implementation, were it to be adopted, that it not take effect until January 1, 2011. And that's my presentation.
Mr. President, okay, Mr. Matz.
I would like to say that...
You're not on a mic, so...
Oh, I'm sorry, I forget. Okay, there we go. If this does go, I would certainly like to have this as a friendly amendment so that it is part of the motion when we do vote, or part of the vote when we do make that decision.
Okay, that's been accepted as a friendly amendment. The friendly amendment is that this amendment shall not take effect until January 1, 2011. Well, I think the committee fell, and Jerry will chime in on that. But the committee felt that not only are we planning for a convention next year, but more important than that for the committee's perspective, because we could always say no to the convention in the fall if we had to. More important than that, we have to plan on how we're going to conduct. If this were to pass, we have various planning that we would have to do in terms of planning how elections will work, nominating other things, making other changes, and that it would not be a proper item for implementation were we to have this enacted and go into effect next year. Is that correct, Jerry?
Yes, that's correct. There are several changes needed in the Constitution. Some of those are mechanical, to be sure, but one came up the other night regarding reporting of chapters and affiliates to the central office. As it stands now under Article 11, Board of Directors' duties, it's a twofold event and the species are just a little different, some serious consideration has to be made as to how that will happen. Elections and nominations in the bylaws and a number of other changes, serious consideration and time need to be given to those. The committee did not consider the potential convention next year. That's not the committee's concern. Our concern is having proper documents that are consistent internally and that serve the organization the best. And that just takes time. So that's our position.
Okay. Do we have enough folks here to run mics around? I want to make sure that we do. Okay. And we've got the ballot problem.
And you have the ballots?
We have the ballots.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we will take one pro and one con. No more than, you have Ed be the, since Lily's not here. Oh, you are here. Okay, Lily will be the timer. No more than 2 minutes. Is that agreed with the body? Per person?
Yes.
No more, and we're going to cut you off immediately in mid-sentence. So, we'll tell you when you have 30 seconds. Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, no, I have a point of order, Kathy.
Kenneth should have...
I'm coming.
There's no motion on the floor.
Okay.
Kenneth should have moved the adoption of the amendment.
We'll recognize Kent first anyway to speak to move the amendment since he's the advocate.
Before he recognized the
yes.
Our suggestion is
that won't be part of your 2 minutes. We need to get a motion on the floor for consideration.
Okay. I will move the adoption of the amendment that is being brought forth to us now.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Ken, your 2 minutes will start with your first word.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. My reason for having proposed the amendment is due to a lot of economic situations. I think we've all had these things happen to us over the past year especially. But people have been cut in their monthly SSI payments. Other things have happened where people have lower income. I think we have the opportunity here to adopt an amendment that will bring more people to our conventions actually than less. I've been looking at the possibility of how we'd arrange this, and yes, things would still have to be considered, but I can see right now people used to say, well, you know, we'd always have the elections in one place over the other. Well, we always do anyhow because they always happen in the fall. I've been looking at the possibility of having 3-year terms, either 2 or 3, depending what we would come up with. And in 3-year terms, every other election for those offices would alternate north or south if we decide to continue to go one time in the north and once in the south. So I think we would have better representation. I also think that what we heard Thursday night at the board meeting in regards to not being able to send people to Washington, D.C. For the ACB legislative seminar, this is also another reason to understand why we can't afford to continue to pay $15,000 or more per convention here. We need to really use the money, I think, to inform our people what's going on. And finally, I just wanted to say that I would think that we could have a one-day at the Capitol this way, and we could also have perhaps a one-day seminar in the north and in the south each year. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have, is Kathy recognized, or I don't know who the first con will be.
I want to tell you that I oppose this amendment because we have been meeting semi-annually so that we could have our resolutions, form policy, get our committees together. Part of keeping an organization together is to get energy from each other when we meet. Fragmenting it in this way is going to hurt us. And as for having an economic problem, I can't remember a time when the blind haven't had an economic problem. Way back in the days when the aid was $50 a month, we had semi-annual conventions and went up to 150. We still had them. People will come when they want to come. Look who's here now. If people want to come to something, they will. If you can't go to every convention, you can't go to every one. But there have been enough of us able to do it that we can keep this organization going. We tried this in ABC, the one-a-year thing. It didn't work out well. The Federation does it. I don't think they're as big as we are. I think this is fragmenting. I predict that if we go to this one-year thing, we will destroy this organization. If you don't have money, get out and raise it.
Okay, we'll have a pro now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I rise to speak in favor of this amendment. I have been a member of this organization for Mitch Pomerantz. I apologize. I have been a member of this organization for 37 years. I believe that this is our time has come to go to a one convention system. I spoke last night about challenges and opportunities. We have a significant economic challenge, and with all due respect to Kathy Skivers, I think things are tougher now, and I think they're going to get a lot worse. What this does, however, ladies and gentlemen, is that it gives an opportunity to every affiliate president in this state. If we are focusing on one convention a year, it means that you can do more on the local level. We can return to a time when we had local legislative seminars, when we had membership development activities on the local level. This will free you up. This will free you up to do more work on the local level for fundraising and for membership development and remove some of the burden that our members have now in attending two conventions a year. I urge, as a longtime member of CCB, that you support this change and agree to a one convention state function. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a con. Cons are good when you can get away with them.
This is Artis Bazin, and I'm speaking against this amendment. I mean, personally, it doesn't matter to me, but as the CCB membership chairperson, I'm concerned about the people who only can go to the convention in their part of the state. For those who go in their part of the state, this means they would only be able to go to a convention every other year. And I'm very concerned about keeping out half of the membership who have been coming to convention, and that this would hurt membership growth and keep us from being able to be together and seeing each other as often as we do now.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll take a pro.
My name is Ramona Craig from East LA, and I support the one convention. We are at a point in time that we need all the resources we can get as a chapter. I believe that you go to one convention a year. Our chapter can continue raising money as it does, but because of the continuous raising and the one convention versus two conventions, our chapter might be able to send more of its people to the convention as it did this year.
Okay, thank
all,
you.
After all, that's the intention, is to get more people to the convention.
I'm sorry. I don't know that they heard the end. Do you want to repeat that?
And that is the intention, is to bring as many people, especially newbies, to the convention.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take a con.
My name is Pam Chedwell, and I'm a member at large. Because of the grace of God, I didn't find out about this organization until 9 years ago. And when I met another one of your members on a dial-a-ride bus, I learned how to become a member of this organization and how to work with the disability that I was then facing. I would suggest that this organization has a great deal of history that I've enjoyed learning about, but it has a history of participation that I've been able to see in the last 9 years. That participation, I believe, consists of a group of individuals who've been around a long time, who have just tremendous dedication and ability to participate at a level that I'm not able to participate at. I've come to the Southern California Conventions. This is as far as north as I've been able to get. And I happen to agree with Artis. I believe that there's many things that are going to be lost if we all go for once a year. I think the viability of communication will suffer severely. I think those that who do work so very, very hard on this twice a year, they're not going to get half the work. They may get more work in order to put this together once a year. I believe.
1 minute.
I believe that there are other people who participate who aren't as able to heavily participate as those who are in leadership, but who need this organization just as much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take someone in favor. We'll switch the cons away to the opposed instead. We're getting rid of the cons.
Hi, my name is Kelly Hill. I'm a member at large, and I just have a couple of questions. First, if you're not going to do this until 2011, we may be well on our way to an economic recovery by that time.
Okay, are you in favor or opposed?
I haven't decided, but I really want to know.
But
I
want to ask a question, well, here's the thing.
I do want to ask a question.
If you want to ask a question about what it's doing, then you can do that. If otherwise, you have to be in favor if you're going to talk now.
Have you considered trying it for some small amount of time, like 3 or 4 years, and then revisiting it?
Okay, that's not the amendment before us. Obviously, if someone wants to make an amendment, they can do it, but that's not the amendment before us.
Okay.
I got a pro, Jeff. No, we're now looking for in favor.
Okay. My name is Penny Valdovinos from Bakersfield. I am for this once a year because I know our group can afford to send more people to the conference at that time. I've been coming for the last 4 years or 5 years to conferences. I see the same people. I'm sorry, people. I see the same people in LA and in Northern California. I don't see the diversity of everybody. Maybe a few, but the most of the people are here. I feel if we go to one time a year that we'll get new blood in. We'll have new eyes to see with. We'll have new thought.
Quiet. Let's give every speaker politeness.
We'll have a new view of everything. We'll also be able to recruit new board members, new secretaries, new treasurers. We're not all going to be able to keep up doing the head table. Is not going to be able to continue. We all need to change. I think change is good.
1 minute.
I think that once a year is also more conducive to people going to nationals. I would give anything to go to nationals. Going to two conferences is, I can't go to nationals. I can't afford it. Our council can't afford to pay for all of that.
Okay,
thank you.
We'll now take an opposed.
Gene Lozano, opposing. I feel that it's going to put greater work demands on this organization by going to one convention. And let's just use one example. Resolutions. We are struggling to get through the resolutions that we get anywhere from sometimes 10 to 20 at a convention. Get through it. If we have one convention a year, it's going to be impossible with our existing structure to get through all the resolutions, to have them approved and rewritten. You're going to burn out people quickly, and it's actually going to probably result in positions of the membership not being addressed timely. Our conventions is probably one of our greatest sales points in a service to the people, not just our membership, but the public as a whole. Provide visibility shows that we have our capabilities and we're educating even our speakers who are coming and learning from us. We need to be more visible and at our legislature, but also out throughout the state and going to one, we're going to be less visible and be considered more of an insignificant organization than we are. Right now, we have a great deal of recognition in the legislature and with your state governments and regulatory people. I think we go to one convention, they'll hear us less often, and we'll lose. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. We'll now go to an in favor.
Mr. President and fellow delegate members, it's Linda Perel. On Thursday evening, we received a rather stern rebuke from our treasurer regarding our spendthrift ways, particularly in regard to the legislative seminar, but with some other issues on the table as well. What I want to know is why is the issue of conventions off the table when it comes to conserving our financial resources of this organization? I'm concerned that if we stay with two conventions, which is a very costly thing, that it will detrimentally affect our organization financially. I'm hoping that the treasurer will have something to say about that during this discussion as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, point of order.
Okay, we have a point of order.
Quick question. If we are going to switch to one, are we going to keep it at the 3 days, or are we going to extend it to a week?
That is just yet. I'll let the presiding officer answer that. None of those decisions have yet been determined. They would need to be determined, obviously, if this were to pass over the course of time.
No, they're not lines.
Well, yes, we're looking for an opposed.
Yes. Jeff?
Yes.
This is David Hanlon. The gentleman that spoke before about the work on the resolution, these resolutions are extremely important. It really does give our organization a direction and a purpose and why we're here as an advocacy group. If there's a money problem here, then what we need to do is to figure out priority. For example, if we need to send two or three people to the legislative seminar in Washington, D.C., let's let each chapter donate $50 or $100. We have 31 chapters. That's $3,100. That should be enough to pay for, two or three people.
Excuse me, David. We're not going to lose your seconds here. Let's not talk during other people's speeches, whether you like them or dislike them or whatever. Let's have some courtesy here, guys. Because when the day is done, this amendment is going to either pass or fail, and we're all going to stick together, I hope. So let's be courteous to one another.
Okay. So getting back to my point about prioritizing what we need in CCB, and one of the priorities, of course, is legislative visitation. And we can, I believe, like I say, each chapter could donate $50 or $100 per chapter. That would be more than enough money to send you and Frank and one or two others. Whatever the organization needs, I believe each chapter can donate the money to keep the organization going, but I do believe in the twice-a-year seminar because we do an awful lot of business election-wise and resolution-wise.
Okay, it's now time for, unless it's a point of order, point of information. Okay, I recognize the point of information.
How long are we going to keep this up?
We can until we get a call for the question. But Kathy, we have another, I would say at least another 10 minutes, and then we ought to be able to get done. I want to give people.
When you think it's time, I want to call for the question.
All right. Are people willing to go with three more each way?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Wait a minute. There's a sense of two. What about two?
Two.
Two more.
Three. We said three.
All those in favor of two, say aye.
Aye.
All those in favor of three.
Aye.
I think they will go for two. That's a democracy in action, CCB style. Okay, someone in favor?
Mr. President.
Okay, Donna.
Mr. President.
Okay.
Jerry, you'll be the last one, I guess.
Okay, tell me when I'm starting.
You're starting.
I'm on the clock. Okay. This was a very difficult decision for me to make. I had not made this decision until I came to this convention this weekend. This board on Thursday was basically faced with some very difficult things. I wish we had as many people in that board meeting as we do today. This board is, CCB is having to transfer monies out of accounts so that we can meet our bills, so that we can meet our payroll. We were not able to send folks to legislative seminar. This board had to make some very difficult and painful decisions that truly made us all ache because of the finances. I am somebody who truly loves what CCB stands for, what we do, the organization we are. Thank God that we are a democracy and that we have a voice and that we can choose to say, agree, disagree, and still continue to work together. My concern is, well, first of all, whatever we decide at this point is not forever. If we go to one convention a year temporarily, I know that we will probably have more people from our chapter come to the one convention a year. And again, this is temporary. And yes, it hurts. And yes, the two conventions a year builds camaraderie, but all of us will need to pull together even more temporarily so that staff can have more time to help us fundraise, so that we can have more time to give.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. We'll do an oppose, and then we'll do one more of each. I know that.
Who is up, Jeff? Pro or con?
Con.
Con.
Against?
I know that Chris is one of the ones who wants to. Yeah.
Mr. President, I was. It was suggested maybe the treasurer ought to weigh in on this issue. This is Chris Gray, treasurer of CCB, and I'm against it. That's why I've got the microphone.
No, 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 this is not. This is not. This is an opposed.
We just had a speech in favor. All right, shall I begin?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I had not planned to speak on this issue today. I'm not as prepared as I might like to be to do so. But I want to say a few things that I think you need to consider, and we all need to consider as an organization. This is a fundamental change in the way CCB does business. It is not a temporary change, and it will not be temporary. It will be basic, significant, and long-term. To say that CCB needs to go to a one convention a year because we can't afford two is incorrect. We could do many things to make conventions more affordable for CCB. This is not about CCB spending too much money each year. It's about a belief that our resources are better spent with one convention. We could change the way that we subsidize conventions if money is the concern. The concern, there are a lot of ways to deal with this financially. That being said, I also want to comment about people. Many of you know that I do a booth each year at each convention at CCB, and I got to say, I do see different people in the North and in the South. Maybe not in leadership, but a lot of the rank and file members who come are different people. Our geography demands that we continue to be a two convention a year organization, and we need to go out and raise the money to do that. Everybody says, well, we could then do this, we can then do that. Two conventions don't preclude us from having a Sacramento day. Two conventions don't preclude us from doing anything else. And to think that they do is simply incorrect. Thank you.
Okay, we'll have one more in favor.
Mr. President, this is Jerry Arakawa, and I'm speaking for the amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, this is probably the most important decision that the rank and file will make for many, many years. And it's appropriate that we take this issue very seriously and we have long, thoughtful, protracted debate about this. Believe me, I've thought about this issue as most of you have. And I'm not going to reiterate what's been said before, other than to say that obviously we are facing economic hard times, unprecedented in many, many, many years as a country, as a world. And that hard time is reflected in this discussion today. Many of us are on fixed incomes. Many of us have a very difficult time, despite CCB's good effort at subsidizing the convention.
1 minute.
Many of us struggle to come to these because we believe in the organization. Secondly, I think one convention, I'd like to kind of put a different slant on what Chris said. One convention will also not necessarily change CCB's face. It may change what we do, and it may change the way we do it. We can actively participate at the local level. We can look at other ways to make ourselves more visible. And the bottom line is, all of this discussion that we've had today won't really amount to much if, by supporting this, supporting two conventions, we risk the potential of insolvency of the organization, or we have to make very serious, serious cuts, such as staff layoffs, such as changing some very serious ways we do business. Thank you. So I would urge.
Okay. We now will switch to a last opposed.
Rick Plath from Burbank, California.
Okay.
Speaking in opposition to the proposed amendment. Chris actually said a lot of what I was going to say, but in addition, I believe that the camaraderie, you know, I've said it before when I was a delegate, as I was a president of the Glendale Burbank Area Chapter for 12 years. Bottom line is this. When you're a chapter member, you don't get as much out of a meeting as you do when you attend a convention. Due to camaraderie, number one. Due to the exposure of legislators, number two, especially when you go to Sacramento, as we have done in the past. Thirdly, the introduction oftentimes to technological advances. It's a matter of having a hands-on experience in more ways than one. And I believe if you go to one convention a year, half of that is going to be lost. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, okay. We've had a good, constructive, and I want to really commend the body for a polite debate. This is a very difficult issue, and it is a very passionate issue. It was hard for me to sit up here with whatever position I might have, whatever that is, and not take a position. But I really like the way everybody out here was polite to those who had an alternative point of view. And I appreciate the body for that. And we should give ourselves a hand for that. Okay. Is it? What does it have to do with?
Hold on. Let me get you a mic.
Yes.
I think technically that question would probably be out of order. We can answer it if the body doesn't object, but technically the question has been called.
Well, I've been concerned that so there are 47 or 49 other states, and other states seem to manage to, with one convention a year.
Okay, that sounds
what's
like
the
a
difference?
That sounds like a position, and we can't just really do that. So rule that out of order.
Okay.
I am informed by, and I had this vague recollection, we've never done it this way, but I asked Roger, and I am informed by Roger that the Constitution does require, unless a voice vote, and we'll do a voice vote first. No, we're going to do a voice vote just because that's the way you do it. But the Constitution requires that in a roll call vote, the board of directors vote, verbally. So although we haven't used that practice before, in my recollection, we need to do it. At least not in a while. So, Gabe, do you have the role? Can you come up here and with a list of the board of directors, or do you have it?
Jeff.
Yes.
If my memory tells me that that's taken last.
It is. I'm not saying to do it now. I'm saying we need to be prepared to do it last.
Mr. President.
Yes.
Is two-thirds required?
Yeah, two-thirds is required. Yes. So we just need to make sure we have the list of the board of directors ready so we're not stumbling and bumbling at that time.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do a voice vote. We'll see what happens with that. All those in favor of the amendment, and I'll restate the amendment, essentially the amendment would be to switch from one convention to two, commencing, 2-1, sorry, 2-1, how about 3-7? You have to keep laughing. Two convention to one commencing, January 1, 2011. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay.
Nay.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay. We it is obviously too difficult to call, and so we will go to a roll call vote. So the first part of the vote will be to pass out the individual ballots. You will keep your vote unruffled if you are voting aye. You will tear off a corner. Ruffles have ridges, yes, Mona says. You will tear off a corner or a ridge if you're voting no. Okay? Do not tear the ballot for aye. Tear off a corner for no. And have your badge.
Go ahead and repeat it.
Okay. To vote for the amendment for one convention, if you are voting aye, do not tear the ballot. If you are voting against the amendment, then tear off one corner of your ballot. Okay, can we have some order? We're having calls for order. I'm recognizing only points of order at this point in time when the vote is beginning. Okay, can we have some order so that folks, whether they have hearing problems or not, can hear, guys? Let's keep it down. Think, do your own thinking silently. Contemplate. Think about Plato's Republic, perhaps. Yes, I will repeat it again, now that we've gotten some quiet. Do not tear your ballot if you're voting aye. Tear off a corner if you're voting no. Yes, aye means one convention, no means two conventions. Now, I don't think I need to say it any more than that. We need our ballots up here. Oh, no, we don't. You don't. I don't get them.
You don't get them.
And if you're a board of director and you get a ballot, you can't vote with that ballot.
Board members, no
ballot. Board members do not get ballots. So don't. Yes, is there a point of order? It takes a two-thirds vote for passage of the amendment. We are voting on the amendment. It takes a two-thirds vote for passage. And guess what? There won't be a runoff. See, you know, your president didn't go to Stanford University for nothing.
You know, I went to Sacramento State, and I could have figured out the same thing.
Ay, ay, ay. Oh, so bad. So bad.
And we're doing the board vote after the delegate vote?
Yes. The board vote is penultimate. Or, no, ultimate. Ultimate.
Ultimate.
That right. Stanford education, and Jeff always tries to use the big words, and invariably I hear him use the wrong one.
Oh, God! Oh.
You better speak in legalese.
Should be that Willamette University one, right?
Yeah.
At USC, they don't speak Japanese. They speak Jaganese.
Oh, no.
I went to San Francisco State, and we teach remedial math and reading to both Stanford and Cal students.
Oh, staff is speaking up. Okay, are we ready? Okay, we're ready for the roll call vote. ACB Capital Chapter, 11 votes. Shh, quiet. Thanks, sorry, Paul.
ACB Capital Chapter, June 12, 11 votes. Yes and no.
Okay. Huh. Okay. Active Blind, Inland Valley. 5 votes. Three, four, two against. Alameda County, 5 votes.
5-4.
Association of Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes.
5
yes. Bayview Chapter, 10 votes.
Ten votes no.
Blind Students California, 5 votes.
5 votes no.
5 votes no. Bro Revival League of California, 5 votes.
5 votes no.
5 votes no. Butte County, 5 votes. 5 votes yes. California Council of Citizens of Low Vision, 5 votes.
5 votes no.
5 votes no. California Library Users, 5 votes.
Library Users reflecting its consensus, 3 votes, no,
2
votes, yes.
3 no, 2 yes. Central Coast, 5 votes.
5 votes, no.
5 votes, no. Compton Chapter, 11 votes.
Here.
Was that a yes?
Here.
11 yes. East LA, 8 votes. 8 votes yes. Glendale Burbank, 7 votes.
No.
No. 7 no. Golden Gate, 5 votes.
5 votes,
five votes no. Didn't sound like no, it sounded like no. You think you can do that again, Marmalina, for the crowd?
No.
Greater Bakersfield, 5 votes.
Bakersfield.
Bakersfield reflecting the members
Five yes. Greater Long Beach. Five votes.
Yes.
Greater Los Angeles, five votes.
Yes.
Greater San Joaquin, five votes.
Five votes yes.
Guide dog users, five votes.
Five votes yes.
Five votes yes. High Desert, eight votes.
Eight votes no.
Eight votes no. Inland Empire, seven votes.
Yes.
Seven votes yes. Orange County, five votes.
Orange County reflecting its membership consensus. Four votes yes, one vote no.
Four yes, one no. Let's see. Orientation Center, five votes. Three no, two yes. Randolph Shepherd Vendors, five votes.
No.
Five no.
Yes.
Redwood Empire, nine votes.
No.
Nine yes. San Bernardino, nine votes.
No.
Nine no. San Diego Braille Club, six votes.
Yes.
Six yes. San Diego Chapter.
Six. No.
Six. No. San Francisco, seven votes.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Six yes, one no. San Gabriel, 10 votes.
10 votes? No.
10 votes? 10
votes,
no? 10 votes, no. San Mateo County, 10 votes.
Ten no.
Silicon Valley, 16 votes.
16 no.
16 no. Yosemite Gateway, six votes.
Six votes, yes.
Six votes, yes. And that concludes the roll call. We'll now go to the board of directors. And I guess, Gabe, I'm last in this case. I think.
Do you vote on this, Jeff? Or is
oh,
it...
yes, absolutely. I do.
Yes.
Okay. And do I need to keep notes, or is the no no? But I mean, do I need to keep a tally, or is
it doesn't have to go in the minutes? Lily has to keep. Well, no.
No, no. I'm asking. Is somebody else counting, or am I needing
Lily
to keep
the count
on this? Okay. All right. Beginning. Let's go down the list here. Jeff Tom.
Yes.
Jeff Tom. Yes. Gene Lozano?
No.
Gene Lozano, no. Donna Pomerantz?
Yes.
Donna Pomerantz, yes. Gabe Griffith? Yes. Chris Gray?
No.
Chris Gray, no. Kathy Skivers?
No.
Jerry Arakawa? Vince Calderon?
Yes.
Dave Jackson?
Yes.
Ann Kaiser?
Yes.
Ann Kaiser, yes. Dave Jackson, yes. I think I'm sorry, I missed a couple there. Ken Metz?
Yes.
Ken Metz, yes. Peter Pardini?
No.
A strong no.
Peter, I'm not sure how you really felt about that.
Peter's not very passionate, is he?
No.
Linda Perrell?
Yes.
Linda Perrell, yes. Richard Rada?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Richard?
Please.
Richard was a yes, please.
That sounds like he's begging.
Okay, Mr. President, I believe...
Okay, thank you, Gabe.
With Lewis Preston not being here?
No, she was not. Never was. Or at least not in the last 2 years.
No. Okay, Mr. President, I believe that concludes the roll call of the board.
Okay, thank you, Gabe. Okay, we'll have the total. When we'll have the total? The yeses were 158, the noes were 206, the amendment is defeated. 168 to 206. The amendment is defeated. So, guys, let's get out there and fundraise.
Yeah, we need all of you.
Because that's the result. Okay. It is now 4 o'clock. I don't really think that there is much business we can take care of, because we would have to adjourn by, 4:15? And that's not enough time for Frank, even at his fastest. So, I mean, I get what we could do is you could give half your report today if you wanted to. But, well, wait a minute. The only reason I say that is because some people won't be here tomorrow. So, some people won't be here. The consensus is, to just...
Two-thirds say no.
Two-thirds said no. That's right. So, Frank, you're on tomorrow. You'll be right after the treasurer's report. Thank you. And the convention stands
in recess
until tomorrow. Be to the banquet. Everybody to the banquet.